Thank you all for coming. Let me tell you that you are in the Parent Bloggers 2.0 session. If you don't mean to be in the Parent Bloggers 2.0 session, then you're in the wrong place. Okay. My name is Merritt Ingman. I'll be the moderator for this session, which features, of course, four lovely Parent Bloggers 2.0. A little bit about me. I am a contributor to the Austin Chronicle, so I've been covering the interactive and the film sides of the festival for about 6 years, and this is my first time to participate because I am also a parent blogger. I write a blog called Baldo, not to be confused with the comic of the same name. And we've been talking about sort of these issues of parent blogging, the culture and the economics over the past couple days since we've been going out and socializing. And I'm hopeful that we can have a really interesting, really fruitful discussion about where parent blogging has come in the last couple of years, from being kind of a marginalized and disrespected blogging activity to being, forgive me for saying the word, a monetized blogging activity, which for better or for worse is on the agenda today. To my immediate right, this is Asha Dornfest, parenthacks.com. She's on the user-generated content tip, so is probably of a slightly different orientation than the other three bloggers. Right next to her is Danny Evans, Dad Gone Mad, who is our dad blogger. Next to him, Tracy Guerin Perez of SweetKnee.com. And on the end, Amy Storch. Okay. So please join me in welcoming our panelists to Austin.
Thank you.
Before we get started, I do need to mention a couple of items of housekeeping. Number one, we are podcasting. So if you have a question for any of the panelists, please approach the microphone and, of course, speak directly into it. Secondly, I see some yellow. Did you guys get the yellow comment cards for this session? Okay. Before you leave, please fill that out and turn them in. I believe, are the volunteers, are you guys going to pick those up? Okay. Ladies in the back. One of us is ringing. So since we're kind of a small group this morning, we had discussed kind of opening up the Q&A to run throughout the session. But we had kind of some conclusions in it from our conversations of the past couple of days, some ideas that we want to be sure to hit while we're here talking together. Let's see. Primarily, blogging about parenting used to be considered a strange thing to do. It was not something that it was ever assumed that anyone would want to read, that parent blogs would have a large readership, when in fact they can, and they do. And telling stories and creating community is very natural, and I think we all think very necessary for parents. So instead of the diaper diarist dismissive view of parent blogging, we each look at it more as a way to find other parents, connect with other parents, express ourselves, stave off the isolation of being a parent, and also meet other people and possibly make a certain amount of money in the process, which to my mind is for the good. We're all people who are parents, and we're creatives, and we like to work flexibly, and we like to pay our bills. But we'll be talking with these folks here in a little while about what that means. Once there is a market of parent blogging, does that change the culture? What are you opening up your family to? When you write about your family online and you amass a certain readership, what does that mean for you personally? And all sorts of other things. So let me start off just by posing a question that any one of y'all can answer. Some people think of parent blogs as boring, narcissistic, which is funny because aren't all blogs at least kind of narcissistic? Why single out the parents? I don't know. At least they're talking about other people and having relationships with one other person. But Anyhow, and marginal. Tell me why they're wrong.
I'm not boring. I read a lot of parent blogs, mom blogs, dad blogs, and you know, I guess some of them can be boring. But the thing is, authors, they don't really care. Not everybody is after a big readership. Not everybody is out looking to make money. For me, I think even the most valuable thing is just I have a really complete documentation of my kid's childhood. I haven't touched his baby book since he was like 4 weeks old. And, it's just the community keeps it interactive and you learn from them. And I guess someone from the outside, if it's boring.
Well, it's boring if you're a bad writer.
Yeah.
And bad writers can write about, you know, going out and getting drunk every night and going to bars and... You know, I mean, you can be in any life situation and be boring and and not a good writer. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there are really bad mommy bloggers out there. There really are, but there are great ones too.
I find that when people find a strong voice that they respond to, it doesn't necessarily matter what that person is talking about, you know, whether they're talking about diapers or they're talking about, you know, feelings or their personal experiences. If they're saying something that resonates with that reader, the reader's engaged. And so I think that once that reader gets engaged, even just a single time, and the comments start happening and it becomes more of a discussion, it sort of turns into something other than just a flat piece of writing that somebody's reading. So, you know, blogging, there are so many dimensions to blogging that, we all have our favorites, but I think there's much more than just simple storytelling that's happening there.
I'm glad to hear you mention storytelling because I think that the act of parenting engenders storytelling. How many times do you end up at the end of the day saying, oh, I have this great story about something that happened with me and my child? Not necessarily, my kid said the funniest thing today, and I'm going to tell you all about it because you must be as fascinated with my child as I am. But there are narratives to our life, and there are narratives to our lives as parents, and I think that blogging is a really natural way of expressing that.
I think that's where the difference is made between a diaper diarist who is just, you know, today my kid went pee-pee on the potty versus, you know, someone who, you know, weaves a story and lets you get to know the people and their family and their lives, and I think that's where the difference is made.
How many of you are parent bloggers? Show of hands.
Bloggers, yeah. Really brave
there
ones.
You go. Yay. That's good. Let me see. How many of you blog but not about parenthood? So are you parents? But you write about different things instead of your parenting? Okay. Yeah. Do you read blogs about parenthood?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Anyone here an advertiser or, in the words of Tracy, a corporate functionary? Couple people, very brave people. I think that we need to raise some hands on our panel as well, because I think we have a couple of LLCs up here. Okay. And the rest of you, is there anyone left? You're just curious about parent blogging? Just curious?
Oh,
right on.
All right.
Okay. So that gives us an idea.
I
told you in. Okay. Hey, that's cool. So you may know about getting paid as a parent blogger, but let me ask you guys, what are the various ways of getting paid?
Well, you know, there are advertisers who want to be, you know, their target demographic is people who read parent bloggers. They're, you know, so they enjoy hawking their products directly to their audiences. I sell t-shirts on my website. I mean, that's just scraps, really, but it's...
Do you really make any money off of that?
You have no idea.
All of New Jersey wears a dad bod too.
I can't walk the streets in South Carolina. So, you know, those are the two primary ways that I monetize my diaper diary.
Mm-hmm. My blog is a little bit, Parent Hacks is a little bit different because it's a resource site as opposed, sort of more of a community resource as opposed to, a personal accounting of my parenting. And so not only do we talk about practical tips, but there's some product discussion and stuff like that too about, you know, people's favorite gadgets and the things that really helped, you know, make life easier. And so there's some tie in there with products. So, you know, when I can, I hook those in to Amazon Associates, and Amazon.com. So I get affiliate fees from Amazon. And then there's Google AdSense. And so at this point, between advertising, graphical advertising and text advertising, and then Amazon Associates, those would be my main monetizing avenues.
Right. Yeah, what Asha said. I think, I mean, my experience thus far has been that I think multiple income streams is very important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, you can have the primary advertisers, you know, the big graphical ads, and I think we're all on one ad network. We're on FM, Federated Media, and but Amy and I do another blog called Mama Pop, and we have the blog Her ad network on that, and that's kind of, I think, the primary sort of monetary force in our blogs is coming from those. But then there's TextLink ads, which is good too. And Amazon, I have a little bit from that. Google, I've never been able to make work. I don't know.
I mean, I don't do really that well with Google either.
Yeah. So, but having all of those different avenues kind of coming together, you can cobble together a little bit of an income. Mm-hmm. But I think income versus living is a really good distinction to make.
There's a canyon there.
Yeah.
Between revenue and
livelihood. Then there are the paid professional blogging.
Oh, yeah.
Side jobs. I have two of those with alphamom.com and clubmom.com, which are, they're interesting in their own way. You know, it's strange when they really want to buy your voice, but then, you know, there's inevitable restrictions put on it. But, you know, that's the steady paycheck I get. The ads can be, mm-hmm. you know, it can be 3 months with nothing, which I had that recently. And, you know, if I didn't have those paid blogging gigs, I'd be very, very nervous that this would not work. But, yeah.
Just
another multiple income stream.
Right, exactly.
A million points of light.
Can I ask you to go into maybe some detail about the restrictions? You use the word restrictions. How is it different qualitatively?
Well, I mean, a lot of it is subject matter. You don't own the copyright. So you're going to be, you might hold back a little bit. You're not, you know, I don't generally put pictures of my son up on places where I'm, you know, if there was ever a conflict down the road, you know, that I couldn't get that back. Obviously, language is the first one. I think some of us parent bloggers tend to be a little salty. And, you know, one of my gigs, I have the freedom to go up to PG-13, and one of them is G. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that can, you know, I know a lot of people say, well, if you're a good writer, you don't need the curse words. And, okay, I'm not that good of a writer.
Exactly.
I feel like I'm funnier with them.
I had paid gigs as well, which I recently gave up for those reasons, because I felt it was too restrictive, and actually had an offer very recently from a major multinational corporation that shall remain nameless to write for them. And they initially approached me and were very sort of, you can write whatever you want, and, you know, just, we love you, blah, blah, blah. And then when it came down to, like, contract time, then it was, okay, everything has to be, you know, G-rated and kid-friendly, and, you know, you can't say anything that doesn't fit with the corporation. And I decided no. I'm like, have you read my blogs?
Yeah.
Do you know who I am? I don't think that's going to work, so... but yeah, I mean, definitely you can make a good chunk of change doing that if you're willing to, you know, to give up a little freedom.
Mm-hmm. I think there's something to be said also, even if you're not doing a side blogging job, if you do a blog that does at some point get some level of readership and traffic, and I'm not even talking about stratospheric readership and traffic, it raises your profile to a point where you start actually getting approached by traditional media. So, you know, magazine publishers, book publishers in some cases. You know, you have an opportunity because you've in some ways created, you know, a name for yourself by yourself, that you have other writing opportunities offline. So that's another thing to sort of consider, that there's sort of this indirect potential that comes with blogging that isn't necessarily direct money making from your blog.
Mm-hmm. Danny, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you have a corporate blogging gig, you know, they've come to you because of what you've written on your own site, you know, regardless of the salty language or the questionable subject matter or what have you. And but, you know, they're still a corporation and you need to write to their target audience, and they don't want you to offend anybody or cost them customers or readers. And so it's been my experience that when you write for a corporate gig, you're sort of making a sacrifice of your own preferred style of writing in order for the buck mm-hmm. that comes in. Right. And I think we've each experienced that, and in some ways, you know, it'll be acceptable for a while, but ultimately, you know, for me, I write because I want to write what I want. And when you have to compromise that, it gets a little bit uncomfortable and right. really not preferential to me at all in any way.
That's not like they're paying us like astronomical amounts of money. I mean, you know, it's like, it's not, as I kind of said earlier, it's not, it's an income, it's not a living. I mean, none of these things. You have to have like, I mean, you have to have a couple paying gigs. Amy has a few paying gigs in addition to her own blog, which mm-hmm. has, you know, ads on it, and she can sort of make a living.
And also, but I want to say about the corporate gigs, like the self-censorship, and I don't want to sound like I'm whining, like, oh, I'm not allowed to say the F word. it's more that I'm concerned about like how long term I can keep this going when, you know, it's hard enough to get your audience, even after you've built a great, loyal audience. They're not necessarily going to follow you over to a gig where they feel like you're not really being genuine.
Right.
And even though, you know, before I became a parent or a blogger, I was a writer. I was an editor, worked for a corporation, was fine with that. But I find that the after a while, you're following at these corporate gigs sometimes tends to disappoint your employer because people just aren't following you, and then you kind of you're at an impasse with them.
Like, you
either let me be genuine and offend some people, or you know, this is the traffic level you're gonna have to be happy with.
Your audience will get diluted. I mean, diluted, not
diluted. Diluted.
Yeah,
diluted. Thank you. That they can only follow so many things, you know. I mean, they're not going to go to, if you're writing for five different blogs, they tend to not, you know, they're not going to go to all those blogs. But and the reason why they started reading you was for your voice and perspective, and you know, that isn't a controlled thing. Mm-hmm. And when it starts becoming reined in and boxed in and controlled, then it tends to lose its allure a little bit.
Is it fair to say that they want your readers but not your writing?
In some cases, it depends. You know, I feel very fortunate, the two gigs I have. I think I've managed to make them work, and they've been very supportive, and you know, I think they've got the right expectations. But then the same company that approached Tracy, there's a few companies that are definitely, it's a race to get on this blog thing, and you know, parents want blogs, they want authentic voices, and you're an authentic voice, now write this way.
Yeah. Right.
I think there's also a bit of a culture shift going on now in terms of blogging, and as it's becoming corporatized. Is that a word, corporatized?
It is now.
And, you know, up until very recently, the only sort of parenting prose that you could find was, you know, in the variations of what to expect when you're expecting or something like that, which is very mm-hmm. clinical and dry and factual only.
Do we have any fans of what to expect when you're expecting? I didn't think so.
A lot of us read it. I mean,
You know, now with the introduction of blogging into the writing and communications platform that we have now, you know, that we're starting to hear real voices and real opinions about what it's really like to be a parent. And it's not just about, how to, you know, stop your baby from being colicky and all that kind of stuff. We're talking about poop now and, different things like that. And I think the corporations are having a real hard time adapting to that kind of realism and, non-sterility in the writing. And I think in some ways, they are looking only for our readers.
Yeah.
But I don't think we're inclined to just give them readers. You know, we wanted to give them ourselves. And so I think each side of that story there is trying to adjust and, you know, learn the new way of writing as a parent.
And Asha, I think that sites like Parenting Hacks are very instrumental in this sea change from, as you said, Danny, experts giving top-down advice to your site, which is entirely user-generated content, that you are asking parents rather than telling parents.
Right.
And I think that's pretty significant. It's a significant change. It's more of a dialogue and it's more community-oriented than what I think a lot of corporations who are trying to capitalize on the phenomenon really understand. They don't quite get that yet.
Well, it's been an interesting, really interesting experience at Parent Hacks because the premise of the site is that, not to throw the experts out the window and they're all terrible, but that they have sort of a place for finding information when you're having a problem at home and your kid won't eat XYZ. The fact is that the most useful information I've ever found has always been from a friend or from a wise relative, and so I decided to try to create a place where we could collect those sorts of tips, those little teeny bits of information that somehow make your day go a little bit better. You know, it can be the tiniest little tweak to your day, but it can make all the difference. And the interesting response that I'm getting from parents, not only are people finding stuff that's useful for them and it's helpful for them, but people are feeling recognized. And that's one of the sort of the great things that doesn't happen in parenting, which is a lot of recognition, because so much of it is invisible. The work that we do, it's invisible. It's, you know, minute little adjustments that we're having to make throughout the day. And so, yes, I there has been a big response in terms of the conversation. And blogging just lends itself to that. I mean, it lends itself to a dialogue where, you know, reading a parenting expert in a magazine or a book, there is no dialogue.
And those of you who are more personal bloggers, let me ask you this question. How are your sites, your parenting sites specifically, since you have multiples, how are they fostering this kind of collective wisdom and community?
Well, just last week, I have a toddler. He's 17 months old. He is living on air and carpet lint and the occasional Cheerio. I know I've read people like my kid won't eat and everyone's like, they'll go out of it. But when it's your kid and, you know, eat something, I put him down for a nap after a really bad lunch and I just wrote and I ranted and I was just like, I don't know what to do and help. And, you know, here I've always, you know, some, like a lot of times my commenters are just like, oh, you're so funny. And they go on and on. But this one, they just rush to help me, to tell me, like, get this book. It's going to be okay. I went through the exact same thing, listing the same pathetic little list of foods their kids take and that, you know, what good eaters they are now. And it wasn't, I think I got like maybe two people that are like, oh, just calm down, you hysterical mother. But most people really were like, oh, I know, it's so frustrating. And honestly, I just wanted to hug them. Like, it was really, it was so helpful. And I got practical advice that, you know, like, and now I know what book to, you know, is everyone recommends. And, but also everyone just told me what to do. And it's like already, you know, he's still not eating, but I'm not clawing my face off anymore. I'm just like, fine. But that was, and I've done that before when I hit a point of frustration. And, you know, sometimes I like knowing that I have a place where I just have hundreds of other parents when, you know, I have one friend with a child my son's age, and that's it. And otherwise, I wouldn't know who to go to.
Mm-hmm. We were talking a little bit in the green room before we came in that each of us in some way has felt kind of let down by the parenting structures in real life. Friends of ours who were not parents when we were parents, or friends of ours who were no longer friends of ours after we all became parents because we did things so differently that we could no longer maintain our relationship. So I think that what you're saying, Amy, I think the sentences that you led with, it's going to be okay, and we went through this too, are probably the two most powerful sentences that anyone who is raising a child can ever hear. And I think that sites like yours make that possible and facilitate that sort of discussion for people who don't necessarily have people in their real lives to talk to that way and that openly as well.
Yeah, I've always been amazed sometimes that the entries I've written that I've hesitated to publish, you know, the time I lost, you know, the time you lose your temper and you just have to dump the baby in the crib and go hide in the closet because you are afraid, like you are so worn down. And I never knew that everybody, like so many people went through that, not everybody, obviously, but, you know, it was something I was too embarrassed to, like, you know, call my mom and be like, you know, who's, you know, 3 hours away, like, you know, calm me down, I don't know what to do. And, you know, everybody was just so, like, both it's going to be okay and then also grateful to hear that we were talking about it, that we could all, you know, even if it was just leaving an anonymous comment on a blog to say, yes, I felt that place. I've been in that place too. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Okay. So since you have this community of commenters, let me ask you kind of a question related to that. And this is a question for anybody. Since you're writing personally about your family, about your children, about your feelings about parenthood and your feelings about what's going on in your home, you ever feel like you're really, 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 really under a microscope?
Yeah.
More than maybe other people do, even. Maybe just a little bit more than someone who is not a personal blogger, for example, or a personal blogger who is not a parent blogger.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Mothers are always held to a very high standard. Yeah. Parenting ups the ante a little bit. So it really, you know, when there's a child involved, sometimes people do get a little judgy.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's very weird. I mean, people can be, in the same way, they can be very responsive and very supportive. You know, you're always going to have a couple people that are going to enter into people who probably haven't even visited your blog before, you know, who are just going to be like, oh, like, I'm just going to, like, leave a little nasty comment. Yeah, but I think the positivity and the support and the responsiveness and the just hearing other people's stories and people saying, yes, it'll be okay, and yes, everyone goes through this and everyone feels that way, and it far outweighs any of the, you know, microscopic, taking apart, judging, you know, experience. Or we wouldn't do it, clearly.
Yeah, the money wouldn't be worth it.
Yeah, I mean, no.
The money is not what keeps you here. It's not what keeps you going. That's nice. It gives me the freedom to stay home and be flexible. And, you know, I appreciate that more than anything. But if I, you know, if the personal emotional support didn't outweigh the negativity you get, I'd pull the plug in a second.
Yeah. We've all talked about the fact that we do this. It may sound like a cliche, but we truly initially do this because we love to do it. And I think the moment anybody stops loving doing what they're doing on their blog, they will stop the blog. I think, you know, none of us get paid enough to feel like, you know, I will be losing my, you know, my worldly fortune if I stop my blog. I mean, certainly for those of us who have smaller blogs, it's, you know, it's just it's not like that. But it's really
And most of us started blogging before monetization.
Yeah. No, it's a
before any of that really started happening. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember when Deuce first put ads on her blog, and that was sort of like, that was huge, and people freaked out in the parenting community, and even people freaked out. And so I mean, when I started my blog, I had absolutely no designs on ever making any money from it whatsoever. It just kind of fell, you know. The whole world started shifting in that direction, you know. I was like, well,
I put ads on my site when I finally realized that my 12 weeks of maternity leave were going to be mostly unpaid. I was like, oh crap.
I think, you know, this gets back to the thesis of our panel here about, you know, can you make real dollars doing this? And you know, depending on what your interpretation of real is, you know, move the decimal two places to the left.
People are surprised.
You can do it, but you can't do it until you've done these prerequisite things, which is, you know, establishing yourself, establishing your voice, giving people a reason to want to come and read you. you can't just expect to put up a parenting blog and put ads on it the first day, and I mean, that's just not realistic.
Is that a common misperception?
Yes. We were at a party yesterday, and a woman was saying to Amy and I that a friend of hers was pregnant and that she was encouraging her to start a blog, and then she could stay home and, you know, blog for her job.
Yeah,
you know?
I get emails from people. Don't tell her that. And it's hard to crush that dream, and I don't mean to, but I'm like, you just, if you want to make this a job, like, you still have to pay your dues with your unpaid internship, I guess.
Yeah. For years.
A couple, like a year, 2 years.
And
the work is, you know, you got to write every day, and you've got to give people a reason to come back. And blog audiences are savvy. They can smell somebody who's just in it to throw up ads, and those blogs tend to fizzle quickly because people's expectations are so high.
Right. I think people forget that it really is just like any other sort of writing career. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact is that, you know, you have to keep producing that content. And I've heard the same message on several panels here at South by Southwest, that it's about producing the good content and the quality content that keeps your readers coming back. But it's true. I mean, it's really true. It either has to have a really strong voice and a compelling, entertaining voice, or mm-hmm. it has to be a useful piece of information. Because I know in my case, it's not as much storytelling as it is about, you know, sort of what's going to, you know, be useful to you. But day in, day out, you got to keep producing that content. And that's what's going to build the readership. And you know, it's the numbers, the readership numbers, that really make it possible to make any sort of income.
Right.
And I think even to take it further than that is, you know, if you're starting a blog to make money, you're doing it in the exact opposite order. You know, I think that may work for corporations who put up sites where there's, you know, almost automatic traffic, and they get away with putting ads on their site from day one, and that might work for them. But this is a completely different genre. And if your intention is just to put up a website that can generate income for you, you're going to be sadly disappointed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Unless it's porn.
Unless it's porn, which, you know, we've all tried.
Parenting porn just
tends to alienate some of our audience, though.
Yeah. You would be surprised how many people get upset about that kind of thing. It's just not appropriate. Danny, let me ask you a question. Is it different for dads than for moms, do you think?
Is what different?
Blogging different.
Parent the blogger blogging. Or for the reader?
Well, I don't know. I suppose either one, really.
You know, I think the vast majority of my readership is female. I would guess it's in the neighborhood of 80%. I think what's different for me is that I'm somehow able to stay away from the drama and I'll just stop right there because I'll get in trouble. But
no.
You know, I think, you know, I don't think my writing is really open up to the commenting and the banter back and forth. I mean, I just kind of tell a story and people come to read it. I don't think I get really into the, you know, like, for example, I wrote a post this week about teaching my son about finger quotes and what that means and how to do it, and how if you're going to be a hack middle manager in some corporation some year, you're going to need to know that skill. And I think that's a departure from the kinds of things that you might see on Amala or Sweetney. And I don't think it generates a lot of the commentary and a lot of the community feel of it. It's just kind of people go for a laugh, and, you know, if they leave a comment, it's, you know, that my son's also going to have to learn how to use the word synergy. Mm-hmm. And he's also going to have to say, you know, net or, you know, all those other stupid corporate terms. So in that way, I think it's different. I think, the male audience and the male voice on a parenting blog is something that's really, you know, not even close to as popular or sought out as the female voice, because the readers are female, and they, just as we discussed here, you know, they want to feel that sense of community, and they want to know that other mothers are experiencing the same things they are. And there's just a big difference, I think.
So you're like a second class citizen is what you're saying, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's
sorry,
my niche.
Danny. We allow you into the club.
We rubber stamp you in. Okay. Let me ask you guys about your side gigs that are different, because You guys on the end, mm-hmm. you have Mama Pop,
yeah.
Danny and Amy, y'all do Snarky Wood, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not so much
anymore. I don't anymore.
Not anymore?
No.
So a lot of you, well, three of you, have side gigs that are not about parenting.
Mm-hmm.
So how is the experience of writing those blogs different? Do you have a different relationship with your advertisers? Are they the ones that make money?
Well, Mama Pop is fairly new. We did, I think my big reason for doing it was that I just needed a break from.
Okay. Let me say Mama Pop is sort of a pop culture site, yeah. although Mama is in the name. It's not specifically mother focused.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And its tagline women focused, is because yeah. we said
all
so,
the writers so. Are, we have a stable. We have a stable of writers. We have like five other people that write with yeah. us on this particular blog, and it's all pop culture, entertainment, celebrity gossip, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah. It's our fun one. But yet at the same time, I guess since it isn't personal, I will admit that I have at times when we were working out the plan, I said, we are going to monetize the hell out of this thing. you know, it's not personal. It's like, you know, if someone wants to take issue about, you know, that I don't think Gilmore Girls is as good as it used to be, like, fine. We're, you know, yeah. it's not like at Amala, it's like, well, you know, you're exploiting your child and, you know, it's,
yeah.
they should take him away, you know, like,
right.
like, that's the stuff that rattles me, which, you know, this site's just, it is, it's a breath of fresh air, but it also is, it's ours. Our writers are encouraged, yeah. we want our writers to use their real voices. We're trying yeah. to, you know, we're trying to get enough money to, like, you know, actually make this a viable income stream for them as well. And maybe, you know, correct some of the problems people have had with their other paid writing gigs, but mostly it's fun.
Yeah, it's fun, and there's very little sort of emotional baggage that comes along with it, and there isn't the criticisms that you get, the personal criticisms that you get as, you know, when you're writing about your family, your child. It's a lot. I mean, it's fun, and it's a lot easier in that sense. You know, that there's no sort of worry about how people are going to perceive you or this or, you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's great. I love it.
And as a pop culture / celebrity gossip site, is that considered like a different animal than a parenting site by advertisers?
We'll see. I mean, we've been up for like 6 months, so.
Yeah.
And we're doing really well. I mean, we have a lot of advertisers and we have a lot of traffic, and
I'm finding our regular audiences seem to be much more willing to follow us there.
Yeah.
Because
everyone's being themselves completely. Like, yeah. We are being ourselves completely, saying exactly what we think and want, you know,
yeah.
and so are our writers. And
yeah. You're being your brand.
Yes, I'm being brand sweetney.
You are not expected to adopt a corporate brand and plaster it onto your own writing. You are allowed to be your own brand.
Right.
Your global micro brand, I think, is the phrase. I don't know. Okay.
I'd like to know if anyone has any questions.
Yeah, do you guys have any questions yet? One.
Come on down.
Okay, can you all approach the microphone since we are podcasting? Thank you.
Hear the voices.
Yeah.
Hi. It's early. I'm Troy Lanier from Dad Labs, and I wanted to revisit Danny's question. but to all of you, you know, is the question to Danny, which was about fatherhood and male blogging and male readership. And I'm just curious, is blogging, and granted this is an issue that's been addressed, but is the blogging essentially a female space, and with the risk of gender stereotyping? And alongside that, you know, I think this is, you guys are part of a new parenting movement, and associated with that is a new fatherhood. Mm-hmm. And that new fatherhood is in which men are taking more responsibility with their kids. And mm-hmm. if blogging becomes essentially a female space, maybe that's wrong. Maybe guys haven't just discovered it yet. But if blogging is essentially female space, and there's this new fatherhood, you know, how do fathers work into that new parenthood? And so I'll also be curious in terms of male readership of the other places as well.
Yeah.
I think there definitely is a space for you know, fatherly blogging, because we have a completely different point of view on what it's like to raise a child. You know, in my household, my wife does all the dirty work, and I teach the kids how to fart, basically, is how it works out for us. So I think, you know, dads have a completely different outlook on what it means to be a parent. And I think the reason why so much of our readership is female is because, you know, wives always want to know what their husbands are thinking and, you know, why they do what they do. And, you know, if their perception of us as just disgusting goons is actually accurate nationwide. And I'm here to tell you that it is. So, yeah, I mean, there are very few well-known daddy blogs out there, but they are increasing in number every month. And I think you'll start to see a wave towards that because guys have a lot to say too. Mm-hmm. It may not always be clean, but we have something to say. You know, I think a lot is wives telling their husbands to read this because, you know, this is the same experience mm-hmm. they've had in their household, you know.
I think my male readers tend to be the silent minority, but they are there. Yeah. They're more likely to email me than comment because the comments are very female. But I do know they're there and they're mm-hmm. great. And honestly, some of the best new blogs I've discovered have been some dads, and they're just, I mean, like Danny's been long one of my favorites. He's yeah. just they're hilarious, and you know the point of view is different, but it's just as important. And I don't know, but women really like reading about daddies that love their babies.
I think male readership, it's actually it's a thing that I think about a lot at Parent Hacks because I've gotten a huge response from dads. And a lot of my readership is about 50-50, unlike most parenting blogs, which do seem to be more of the 80-20, you know, heavier toward moms. And one thing that I have, the sort of email feedback I've gotten from several dads is that they feel like, first of all, Parent Hacks has a problem-solving approach. It's very practical, very sort of like, get in there, fix it, get out, you know. So, you know, we talk, but in the course of problem-solving, there's a lot of really great discussion about, you know, about sort of the emotional side of parenting and also, you know, just all of that stuff. And so dads have said to me that they feel like it's a place where they feel like they can be fathers. They don't have to be fathers trying to fit into a mother culture on the web. And so I actually think that there's a huge opportunity for strong voices in the father blogging community. There's just a huge opportunity. And I'm surprised, actually. I mean, there are already some fantastic dad blogs, but there's room for a lot more, I think. And in fact, in my case, it's the opposite. A lot of times husbands are telling their wives, you got to read this blog. And so a lot of mothers have started reading because their husbands have brought them over.
It's because it has the word hacks in it.
Hacks, yeah. Exactly.
Like, hacks.
There's the little,
I like the sound of that.
The sort of the geek yeah. turn. It works. No, I mean it's a great community, and the quality of the discussion is fantastic because it's so balanced, because everybody can bring their own voice to the discussion, and there's really no need to, you know, sort of fit into a particular culture.
That was an excellent question. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm a little nervous to try to follow.
Go for it.
Three and hope that one of them hits.
Can you maybe pull the microphone just toward you a little?
I was afraid it was going to make a bad noise. Is that better?
Yeah. Okay. Excellent.
Now you look like a rock star.
Sweet. First of all, I'm Michelle Calley. I'm with MomSquawk.com. We're a community blog, and our traffic is just about to the point where we're thinking about monetizing. We've got a new site being built. It launches next month. The infrastructure is there, but we're just a little nervous. So the first question I was going to ask is, a lot of you have touched on like Deuce and the controversy there when mm-hmm. she started to monetize. What we really like about what we've established now is we're all a community. Our commenters are with us. We're all peers, and we're afraid of any backlash that's going to happen as a result of trying to like distinguish ourselves as now you need to pay us. If any of you had an experience like that, how you dealt with it would be really helpful.
Ads are really very expected
yeah.
now.
People don't blink at it.
Honestly, I think, you know, it really, it's going to be, obviously, anything you do, there's going to be backlash. There's going to be somebody that, you know, that's definitely inevitable. But most people don't even bat an eye now.
No.
It's, especially since you have a community that already is, it sounds like they're loyal, they're engaged. It's not, you know, just like, here, we're throwing this up and now we're going to, you know,
so you think
we're gonna make tons of money and this is all we're about, you know.
Just
so
like put them on the new site and hope no one
just
notices.
Just don't say anything about it.
Hope
yeah.
they
just do it.
Okay, perfect.
I, Actually, you know, Federated Media has been mentioned here once before, and when they initiate working with a new author, they provide a survey so that, you know, your readers can answer the survey. And I think I position that as somehow saying, you know, I'm going to be doing some advertising and I'd like you to complete the survey because I want to make sure that we're not advertising things that have no relevance to you. You know, you don't want to see an ad for a porn site on here. So, you know, and that got good response. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, the best thing is readers aren't stupid and, you know, just inform them. And you're not going to please everybody, but I think information is key.
I agree. And I also think your readers will support you trying to, you know, pay for your hosting and everything, all the work that you do. People will encourage you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thank you. Sorry to be a hog, guys. Second question. For those people in here that are just getting started, what did, when you're talking, obviously you got to do the work, you got to put out quality writing every day. What did you find most instrumental in building your base? Was it participating in like blog rings? I mean, can you give any tips in that regard?
Blog rings.
The biggest thing that affected my traffic.
Sorry. Good to know.
No, useless.
The biggest help to me was commenting on other blogs.
Absolutely.
You know, you leave relevant, interesting, disgusting comments on other blogs. And
they
people
click through.
That's how I found him. I was like, should I be offended at that?
Yeah.
Who is this guy? And then I read, I was networking. Like, oh, I love him.
That's a form of networking.
Right. So join the conversation.
People that you connect with, try to reach out to them, whether it's in comments or, you know, email them and
link,
you know,
link to anyone who links to you. And, you know, just they'll, smaller sites will see you on their referral logs and come through. And it's just kind of.
Yeah.
That's organic growth.
Yeah.
That's growth that's emerging from a discussion that's taking place rather than some sort of artificial steroid growth.
Right.
I think, too, since you have an engaged community, you know, help. Let your community help you. You know, give them, if you can give them a voice, and if some of them are bloggers, great. You know, let them talk about you. Let them, you know, if you're a regional thing, have some events and, you know, let them get together. Let them help you spread the word.
Are you based
in the occasional?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Are you based in Austin?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I'm from here. I think I've met you before, maybe at Blogger.
Yeah.
I think. Third question, and this is really tacky, and I know it, and you can tell me, and I will just sit down and shut up. Our bloggers right now come from our community, and we have one, Mama Stuff. She's a total rock star. She's kind of what's built our blog traffic. We've got a couple that aren't so great. If the money shows up, we're kind of maybe thinking about trying to buy some talent. When you talk about corporate offers, would you be willing to ballpark what you see, not what you're getting, but what you've seen out there? Just and like I said, you don't have to. Just as a benchmark,
they're all over the place.
Yeah.
We've seen everything from $10 a post to $1,000 a month, couple thousand a month. You know, it really depends on
How much content you want.
How much content, you know, it is definitely like a little blogger just starting out is probably more likely to just do it for, you know, $50 versus somebody who kind of realizes how much you can make on ads on your own site, on your own domain. Somebody might be a little more savvy than that. They're probably going to be, they're going to have a higher price tag.
Yeah.
So it's.
Hi, my name is Ben.
You might want
to point that out.
My name is Ben. I have a very quick question. You've all talked about sort of the income and things that come from monetizing. What are the costs? How much harder is it to, per post, to, you know, add your affiliate links or whatever for a monetized blog versus a non-monetized blog?
It's not too much. I mean, my site, for Amala especially, ads are strictly in the sidebar. I don't do any, you know, I'm not interested in any type of pay per post, pay for links, and you get all kinds of offers, but really it's, you know, you're still paying for your hosting. You know, and that's
it's basically like, it's hosting. I mean, I run Sweetney and Mama Pop, and then my husband has a site all on one DreamHost account, you know, and it's, I don't know, like $120 a year.
Mm-hmm. I'm on TightPad, and it's like, you know, I was like a charter member, so I pay like this ridiculously low amount, and you know,
use WordPress.
They're real great. You know? It really is just a question of dropping in code in your sidebar, having a design that works for it. And, you know, I'm cheap. I did my design myself. So I, like,
looks like a something on a spiral bound notebook from junior high.
In the case of adding affiliate links, it's just a matter of basically getting a little bit of code from Amazon.com. So it's just a little extra cutting and pasting, but really not that much work.
Yeah.
So my question actually kind of continues that discussion from paid, you know, banner ads to the PR side. So I was curious how many times you guys are being pitched, you know, here's a brand new product that's out.
Excellent.
Here's a new study that's out. And, you know, good examples, bad examples, how transparency comes into fact with that.
Right.
And also, as you're talking about blogs as a resource for parents now, you know, they're not picking up the newspaper and reading the parent editor anymore. But that parenting editor is getting pitches from people like me about new products and new services.
Right.
So, you know, you actually are a really good resource. So what's the best way for us to share that information so you can share it with your readers?
Don't spam us.
Yeah, please don't spam us.
I get multiple pitches a day. And I think really read the sites you're pitching to. And if it's a site that doesn't ever do product reviews, just more be like, okay, I will accept like samples, but I can't, like, I don't do product reviews. So it's more like, you know, inquire about placing an ad rather than, you know, just, but if it is a site that you've seen occasional product reviews, then definitely like just email them personally and, you know, introduce yourself. And
within our genre though, it's like, I don't know of any, it's all subjective. Anyone I would consider to be a top person in our genre who does product reviews.
Unless it's like one of their side sites.
Yeah, they do. They have like a little tiny little, like, you know, site on the side that's like pushed away from their real site. That's sort of like, oh, here's where I'll just drop, you know, a couple.
There's like cool mom pics and like shopping sites and they welcome you know, samples and products and stuff. But the problem is a lot of the personal diaries. Yeah. Like it does have to be a little more organic. Like that book that all my readers recommended, I'll go read it, and if I find it works, and oh gosh, I'm going to talk about it. Mm-hmm. But not because, you know, somebody sent it to me and it's like, you know, please, here's for $50, you know, can you do a post? So
Parent Hacks actually does product reviews, and I get pitched a lot. And I find that the pitches that I respond best to, it's like pitching a traditional magazine or anybody else. The first thing they say is to, you know, read the magazine. So if it fits in with the kind of content that I'm doing and if the product really would appeal to my readers, then it's something that I would consider. And I also find that personal pitches really do much better than form letters, even though that is extremely labor intensive for you. It really works for us when someone can tell me, you know, here's why I really think Parent Hacks readers would appreciate this product because it solves this particular problem. I'm definitely inclined to take a look. Yeah. And I do think that blogs are it's labor intensive to find those blogs that really would appeal, but it's probably very worth your while.
Right.
Okay, I think we have time for those two more questions.
Two and a half. I actually had kind of a statement, and then I'm going to steer the conversation in an entirely different direction. I am a video blogger, so I have a blog with video on it, and it seems like this whole conference, everybody's asking me, when are you going to try and start making money off of it? And I'm a computer geek. I have a day job, and I do this passionately, but it's in my spare time. And am I crazy for not?
Not at all.
No.
People are like, oh,
no.
Make money.
I do not make any money from my blog.
Really?
Because I am a journalist, so I don't have ads. As far as I know, I don't think I make any money unless someone goes out and buys a book because of reading my site, which I doubt they do based on my Amazon ranking. I don't want to have those pressures of my site traffic and all that stuff because I already do that. I do that for kind of a living. I mean, it's a lot like blogging, but I can say whatever I want when I blog because I have no advertisers. And I just assumed that if I opened that door, there would be restrictions upon me and it would end up being a hassle and not pleasurable. And that was what I was going into it for.
Yeah, you create an animal sometimes. Like I realized that I wanted to stay home with my son. That was it. And I know a lot of people saw it as, oh, she just wants to make money off her blog and, you know, get all this attention or anything. That really wasn't it. I wanted to stay home. I needed to bring in just a little bit of money to make us comfortable to do that. But now it is hard because now I can't walk away from it. I can't say like, enough, I'm done, you know, unless that making a major life change. So if you aren't interested, don't do it.
Don't go
into the light.
Stay away from the light.
I'm a mommy and I'm a Unix administrator. But so anyway, so taking the conversation in a different direction. What I was reading the little excerpt from the thing. I know we're talking about making money, but one of the things was how does mainstream steer what content you put in? And we're talking about, you know, we're parents and we're talking about our kids. One of the other panels yesterday was, you know, what do we allow our kids to put on the internet? Well, what do we allow ourselves to put on the internet about our kids? Mm-hmm. Meaning,
that's
you
a
know,
great question.
I have a video blog and my husband and I have rules, you know, I can't put in like street names, the house number, the license plate. Yeah. Well, I just was interested.
It changes all the time.
It's squishy.
It's a very good question.
It's fluid. Yeah. I mean, I had a really bad experience earlier this year that made me kind of really reel back in what I was putting out there because I mean, up until this past year, I had my, you know, I had identifying information all over my blog. People could, I might as well just put up a big, like, Google map with an X on my house, you know, like, come find me, like, you know, and all of my personal information was out there. And, you know, and as far as my daughter specifically, you know, I was throwing up all of our photos on Flickr public. You know, I just wasn't thinking, you know, I'm just like, oh, I'm just a press person, I have a blog, whatever. And then I had something that happened in relation to my daughter that made me just completely redefine everything and just pull everything back in and make all my photos private. And it's like you learn where your boundaries are and what you're comfortable with through just doing it.
Yeah, I started my blog before I had my son. So at, you know, the rules back then were very different, especially when I had like 5 readers, the rules were different. You know, I thought nothing of like taking it, you know, camera phone picture of somebody who bugged me and being like, this person's stupid, you know. And now I've gone back, I've deleted stuff, I've changed it, you're allowed to change your mind, and it's sometimes it's annoying that you have to do it like so publicly, and it is hard to reel back in, but you know, there's always the delete button, and next time Google Cache comes around, it's poof, gone.
So. Yeah. I think it, you know, as your readership grows and you become more popular and more people are reading it, that's when things really start shifting, you know, because then you're like, oh, okay, well now, you know, when 100 people were reading it or 10 people were reading it at the very beginning, you know, it wasn't as big a deal. Now when there's thousands of people coming to read it, then it's like, for every, you know, 1,000 person, how many of those people do you think are probably somewhat psychotic? You know, I mean, just on average, you know, in the population. And then it's like, okay, well, maybe I need to, like, be a little more careful. But, yeah.
Hi. My name's Andy Carvin. I'm also a video blogger. My wife and I are piloting a new video blog and video sharing community at dirtydiaperdiaries.com. And I've been active in the video blogging community for a long time, and one thing that I've really liked about it is that members within the community go out of their way to develop resources to encourage other people to get involved in the movement, if you will. You know, teach them how to edit video, how to post a blog, how to deal with commenters, even starting to pull together things like how to form an LLC if you start getting really good at what you're doing. Has the parenting blog community started pulling together resources like that yet?
They definitely have. Earlier this year, I got a comment from a guy who said he was stationed in Iraq, and he and all of his buddies read my site because it, you know, was a little ray of sunshine for them in the middle of hell. And I just decided that my readership collectively would adopt this guy and make him our cause. And the response was insane. I mean, people sent 12 packages of all kinds of different things to this guy. So that doesn't address your point specifically, but I think it does address the point that it's really kind of a strange thing to say, but you know, you have some pull with your readership and you can gather the collective might of
our viewership.
Yeah. Or viewership.
Yes.
Readership, viewership.
Yes.
But you know, that's an engine, and you know, you can, if you have a good cause in mind, you really can get them to work together and assist each other and be resources for each other. I think, you know, they come to read or view your site because they respect you and what you do. And I think that, you know, gives you an opportunity to sort of adjust the sails a little bit if you think that there's a cause worth supporting.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. You can also send them as a lynch mob after plagiarizers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let me close on a one last question. Where do you guys, we've been talking about the so-called glut of parenting blogs. Okay, there are 40 mom blogs at Club Mom alone. Where do you think we'll be this time next year?
Oh, we'll have, there's going to be a whole bunch more corporate sites that are going to launch and try to cash in on blogs, and most of them are going to fail because...
And
people
are going to be
actually, they don't understand how to harness it.
And the pay scales are going to go down.
Yeah. Because they can get people who don't already have traffic for $50 a month. And why should they pay $500 or $1,000 a month to people, you know?
Go ahead, Anita. No, my hope is that in my experience, the vast majority of my friends in real life that I speak to about blogs sort of, they look at me politely and think, she's a geek, she's got a blog, but, you know, I'm never going to have a blog. I personally think that blogs are actually going to, people are going to discover just how accessible they are and how easy it is. And so I actually think parenting blogging will increase just because it's becoming, you know, more obvious to the mainstream that it's an easy thing to do. And I also think that there will be more journals, but there will also be more resource sites, sort of similar to where Parent Hacks is going, that instead of just telling a story, they're coming up with, you know, building a community around a particular topic or a particular resource.
Yeah. I agree with what was said earlier that, you know, I think corporations are going to start to get their feet wet in terms of blogging, and I think they're trying to learn how to make it work as a revenue stream for themselves. Right now, you know, according to what I've seen, they really don't have the handle on it yet. They really don't know how to, you know, harness, you know, all this readership and all these writers into something that they can, you know, translate to their shareholders and say, look, we made you money with these parent bloggers. I think they're getting better at it. I think they're getting closer. Every 6 months or so, we see another corporation springing up with some sort of a parent focused blog community. I think they're getting closer. They're honing in on how to make money for themselves out of it. And I think that's going to be a huge trend in the next 12 months.
Right. But I think, you know, I mean, how successful that will be, but I think parent blogging will continue to be huge. And I mean, I kind of feel bad for people that are starting now though. I mean, I think there's going to be this, I mean, there is a huge rush of blogs being created all the time. But you know, getting your voice heard when there's, you know, how many thousands of blogs are created a day, and it's just but I think it will continue to be huge, and advertisers will continue to figure out different ways of making money off of it, obviously.
But those strong voices, they make themselves through.
I have faith that the organic growth we talked about, that really works.
It does work.
Yeah.
And I believe
it will continue to work.
Absolutely. Because I only started Parent Hacks a year ago, and the response has been tremendous. Tremendous. Mm-hmm. From, yeah, a year. I mean, and from these guys, the response has been tremendous. I mean,
oh,
we were
gosh,
not friends
first time
before
I found the site.
Happened.
Same thing. I was like,
it was
like a tennis ball on the edge of a table. Brilliant.
Genius.
No more bruises.
No, but I mean, it's not that, you know, there's this, the site, it's just different in its focus. But the point is that there was a space for me, even though I was new. I mean, there was a space for me to join in the conversation, to start talking to people that were already talking. And I've had incredible support from both established bloggers and also, you know, readers. It's been a great experience. So I would encourage anyone who wants to do this and who feels a passion for it, whether or not you think you're a great writer, finger quotes. but if you have a passion for the story that you want to tell, tell it. And
even if just one day all it is something that you show to your children to say, look, mama was human. Mm-hmm. She made mistakes. She was crazy, but oh, she loved you so much. Mm-hmm. And I did the best I could. And I really think that's, I mean, really valuable thing that, as we mentioned the other night, I had no idea until I had a baby that, like, my mom felt this way about me. And it really healed a lot of things I had in our relationship because, and I wish I'd known that. I wish I'd had letters from her. And, so that's all that's really at the end of the day. It's worth more than money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, we're at time, you guys. So we're going to call it. Yeah. But let me thank you all for coming and speaking with us on the most hated day of the year for parents, spring forward.
We're
going to have bedtime struggles tonight, y'all.
Thanks for coming, everybody.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.